and the early morning month of Magh, and that's a whole lila there, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, and then suspicious Kutila, she woke up and said, where's Radharani? She asked Kutila, where's Radharani? It was early in the morning, she didn't see her in the house because there's a joint family. Kutila's living there also, and Jatila, and Abhimanyu, and Durmada, because it's a family house, and Radharani. Durmada is the brother of Abhimanyu, brother-in-law of Radharani. So she said, where's my sister-in-law? Where's Radharani? And Jatila said, oh, she went to Yamuna to take auspicious magma. Oh, I'm sure she's with that Krishna. She's not chaste. I'm sure she's meeting with Krishna. This is some pretense to meet with Krishna. A pretext to meet with Krishna. So following her suspicion, that suspicious Kutila runs up to Nandagram. Oh, Mother Yashoda, pranams, Nandavats. How is your Lala? How's Nandalala? Is he fine? Yes, he's very fine. Oh, where is he now? Oh, he's gone to the Yamuna to take auspicious magma snan. Achha. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. So what does Kutila do? What do you assume she did? She goes right to the Yamuna to try to catch her unchaste sister-in-law, Radharani, red-handed with that rake known as Krishna, or that lumpak, that nagar, lover boy known as Krishna. So she runs there, and the whole thing goes on. So this, of course, Krishna disguised himself as Abhimanyu and created a very humorous pastime, love-filled, rasa-filled pastime, which is in a book by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur called Chamatkara Chandrika. Pranks, some three pranks or so. Krishna disguised as Abhimanyu, Krishna as a female singer, and Krishna as a doctor. At any rate, so now it's been spread, a rumor has been spread all over Braj Mandal that Radharani is not chaste. And people are starting to talk, Radharani's not chaste. And this is most shameful, because her father's a king. He's the king of the Barsana country. It is like, oh, he's a king. He's Brajendra. Prishabhana is a Brajendra. He's the king of Braj and of that Barsana kingdom. And also Nandamaraj is called Brajendra, and he's the king of Nandagram, that kingdom. Like the Bharatpur king. Bharatpur is an area of Rajasthan, the Bharatpur king. And the Ajmer king, and so many Jayapur, there's so many different kings in different regions, and then they fight. So the rumor is very embarrassing and shameful, and it tarnishes the name of King Vrishabhanu, that Vrishabhanu Nandini is not a chaste lady. And it's very shameful and disgraceful and ruined the family name. So now Yogamaya, she wanted to prove to everyone in Vrindavan that Radharani is the most chaste woman in all of Vrindavan. And then just completely turn this rumor upside down. In fact, make it backfire. Because this rumor was started by Jatila and Kutila. Because they wanted to show that their daughter was unchaste. And they want to punish and capture this Krishna. And it's all lila, of course. He's the perpetrator of this crime of defiling their daughter, Radharani. So now the rumor spreads. So Yogamaya said, all right, we should have a test of who is the... Let's have a challenge. Let's have a test. Chaste woman in all Vrindavan. So here's the test. We'll take one clay pot and we'll poke holes in it. One mud cup and hundreds of holes. Now, if Yogamaya proposed this test, if a lady is chaste, she'd be able to go down to the Yamuna and fill this water pot with water, Yamuna water, jal, pani kumbha, on her head and walk with it, and no water will fall out. And she's really chaste. So one by one, different so-called famous chaste ladies. So someone said, Jatila, you should carry, because Jatila is the mother-in-law of Radharani. So then she said, yeah, certainly I'll. No, she actually, Kutila, they asked her. But she wasn't married, so she couldn't do. So then they asked her mother, and her mother said, "No, I better not do." So Chatila didn't even go in the contest. And then Mother Yashoda picked up, the water came out. She's chaste, but she knew she was chaste because it's every woman that picked it up, water came out. Chatila didn't even do it. Obviously, the water will come out. Yashoda is chaste, but this is the Leela. So the water came out because they asked Yashoda, and then because it was to save her son's name, because the rumor was that Radharani's unchaste, and her chastity's been broken by Shamsundar, by her Nandalal. So then to prove her, to save the name of her son, then Yashoda picked up, but the water came out. So then, oh, now the plot thickens. Mother Yashoda picked up the pot and the water came out, and it's her son. Now, the next one to pick it up is Radharani. So Radharani picks up the water pot, hundreds of holes in the water pot. And when Radharani's putting the pot in the Yamuna, and she's filling it with water, she looks in the pot, and she sees a smile. Inside the pot, she sees someone smiling. A smiling face looking at her from inside the pot. And that's Sham's smiling face. And Sham is actually there smiling at her with all kinds of assurance and peace and confidence that, don't worry, everything will be fine. So then Radharani, because she put the pot in the Kumbha and the Yamuna, and she was thinking, this is impossible. And I know that actually I meet Krishna every night. And now the truth is going to be revealed, and I will be I don't mind if I'm defamed. She's thinking like this, Radharani's thinking. I don't mind if I lose, if I become shameful and defamed, but not my beloved, not my Priyatam. I wouldn't want anything to happen to him. Let me go to hell, let me be burned at the stake, let anything happen to me. But let me be drowned in the Yamuna or burned in fire. But I don't want the slightest doubt come to my Priyatam about his impeccable character and perfect behavior. That would be worse than death for me. If anyone was to say prove one thing, now it's a rumor which means nothing. Anyway, and then she was thinking, then she was lost in her own thought when she put the pot in, and then she opened her eyes. Huh? What am I seeing? Who am I seeing? I said, is this a dream? Is this an illusion? What am I seeing? Then, all right, Jai. Jai Sri Krishna. So then Radharani picked up the pot very slowly from Yamuna. There's hundreds of holes and no water coming out. Puts the pot on her head. She starts to walk, and everyone was there, Purnamasi, Chatila and Kutila and Yashoda, and all the ladies and all the senior panchayat members and Nandababa and Vrishabhana, their family names at stake, Kirtida, Sridham, Dao, Nanda, Yashoda, everyone, Vrishabhana, Chandrabhana, Nanda, Upananda, Abhinandan, all the brothers were there. And Radharani's just walking and not a drop. And then everyone's like, dumbfounded and astonished. This is impossible. How is it humanly possible that water's not coming out, not even a drop? It's just staying there. Because inside, Krishna expanded himself into Ananta Rupam. Inside the water pot, Krishna's Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan. Krishna is smaller than an atom or bigger than the whole universe put together. Everything is within Krishna and everything is outside of Krishna. Mayam Tatavidam Savam Jagat Avyaktimurtina. So Krishna expanded Ananta Rupam, and everywhere Krishna put his fingers in the holes of the pot. Krishna says in Gita, Sarvato Panipadam Tat Sarvato Shishavomakam. Sarvato Panipadam Pat Tat. Says, everywhere my hands, Pani means Sarvato Panipadam, everywhere my hands and face is Mukam. And so hands means fingers, so everywhere. So inside the pot, everywhere were Krishna's fingers, and all sides of the pot, poking, filling the holes, and not a drop of water went out. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan ki jai jai Shri Radhe. Param 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 sati Radharani ki jai. So this Leela in Vrindavan prove the supreme purity and satihood of Radharani, because she realized that everything belongs to Krishna, including herself, and everything will come from Krishna. So she surrendered herself absolutely and completely to Krishna. This is the perfect meaning of sati. But then, nevertheless, Krishna was looking at them when he said this. He said, you are married. You should at least, you should leave here to uphold the reputation of your marriage. They had a reputation to uphold because it mentions here in the verse that the Sanskrit says that you have to, says, sushu sadvam patim. This word sushu, it says you must, sushu sadvam means you must serve. But actually, exactly it means with your husbands. You have a you're a sati, you're a chaste married woman, a chaste wife. And you should go home, at least you're married, the nitya siddhas like Radharani Lita, you should go home to uphold the reputation of your family and perform your religious duties. Because this word sushu sadvam means, and it says patim, you have duties to perform with your husband, conjointly with your husband. In marriage, there are certain duties and functions that husbands and wives must observe together. So he said that you have duties to perform, religious duties to uphold, along with your husbands. Like when Ramchandra in Treta Yuga, after he banished Sita to the forest, to wherever she went, she ended up in the forest to be in the ashram of Vasishtha when she had love and Kush. And there was some question about her chastity by some dobi, her being 1 year in the house of another person, Ravana. So during that time, then there were so many yagyas and pujas and homas that Ramchandra had to do with his wife. The wife sits there and they both throw the grains and so on. He didn't have a wife. So he asked the rishis or Vasishtha, whatever, what to do. He said, well, if your Sita's not there, you can make a murti of Sita, make an archamurti, make a deity of Sita, because a deity is a representative of your wife. So they made a golden murti of Sita, and then she sat there and then, to represent Sita. Now, because husband must perform certain homas and rites and yagyas with the wife, otherwise they're not perfect, or no fruit is there, no homa phal or yagya phal, fruit of the yagya. So now, Krishna is saying, you have to go home because you can't stay here in the forest, not with me, because you're sati and you have husbands. And you have to go home and sit next to your husband and do different yogis. So this one meaning, shushu, shushu sadvam patim. Then he talks to the unmarried gopis, and that's where he says, oh, you have duties to do. You're married, you have duties to do with your husband, like homas and yogis and your religious duties. And then the ones that weren't married, he said, oh, you have to take care of the vatsabala. Vatsavala, you're coward girls. You're cowherd girls. You're not Brajavadu. Brajavadu means young married wives of Vrindavan. The Brajavadu. You're just choris, Braj choris. You're young village girls. He says, he's appealing. All these three groups of young ladies are in front of him. The Nitya Siddhas who are married. And then the Sadhana Siddhas who are married. Municharis. And then there's the unmarried girls. The Kanyas. They also came. They ran. The Kanyakumaris, they ran out. I said, you should go. You are also sati in the sense you should be chaste to your duty. Chaste to your duty as your varna duty, your varna karma. Because you're abira, you're cowherd girls. And you have to go take care of the babies of the cow. That's what he says, the calves may be crying. So he says to them. And so then he says, go back, don't delay. Oh, chaste ladies, serve your husbands and give milk to your crying babies. And then to the newly married ones, he said, those were the sadhana siddhis. You should feed your children, and take care of your husbands. It says, tan payayata duyata. And feed your children. Because the sadhana siddha gopis, some of them were restricted from going out on the first night and they had children with their husbands. And then they gave up all that whole attachment, they went out on future nights. Now Krishna is saying, he's describing here, their children and the calves. He's actually employing a particular type of philosophy or preaching style. One Acharya says, by saying that you have your children, you that are newly married, the sadhanas, the gopis, the shruti charis, the muni charis, you have children, And then the other ones that have calves, the unmarried ones, he said he's indicating that those who are interested in happiness should not go where there is suffering. Nice point. Those who are interested in happiness should not go where there's suffering. So he's implying that if you go away from your dharma, your varna dharma, your ashram dharma, your dharma is you're happy if you're doing what you're supposed to. So your unmarried girls, you're supposed to take care of the cows and the calves. And what are you doing here? How are you taking care of the cows and the calves in the middle of the forest? And don't you know they're crying and they want to be fed their mother's milk? Maybe like babies, like human babies, the calves cry in the middle of the night. Maybe they link them up with their mothers, can't say. But it's 12 o'clock and Krishna's telling, go home and take care of your crying calves. Your vatsabala, your baby calves are crying. So that's where your happiness is when you're doing your dharma. That's happiness. When you're doing your dharma or ashram dharma, that's happiness. So why go where there's suffering in the frightening forest and with a questionable person like me? So he's actually indicating this principle by saying, go back to your husbands, go back to your calves and take care of them. And then this internal meaning in the first verse, in 21, when Krishna was talking about Raki Shakara Rasjitam, that the protector of the night, Raki Isha, the full moon, was coloring all the flowers and making them look very bright. So one meaning of this is that the flowers, they were not yet blooming. The flowers are blooming in the forest like Malika Utfula. Utfula means blooming. But there was no fruits yet. And the reddish moonlight was shining on the flowers and they looked very, very attractive. And these flowers, by looking so beautiful under the reddish moonlight, they were suggesting, that was in Udipan, that this is a perfect time for love. So by this, Krishna is indicating that the gopi should stay where there is fullness. It was a full moon. The moon was shining fully and it was making the flowers look so beautiful and full. And there's a whole principle here, Manacharya is explaining, of fullness. The flowers, utpulika malika, utpulika, utpula, means full, fully blossoming. You've heard this term, fully blossoming lotus flowers, fully blossoming. They're not going to blossom anymore. Sometimes a flower opens up a little bit and then you pluck it or you wait till it opens up fully. So the moon is full, the flowers are fully blossoming, and they're reddish in tint. So this shows that Krishna is saying you should stay where there's fullness. Om Purnamidam Purnamidam. And Krishna is there, where if you go back to your house, there's not fullness, there's some lacking, something missing though there. So then the analogy is given that only those with partial devotion can cling to the world of illusion, material attachments. And they can never stay full-time with Krishna in pure Krishna consciousness. So the full moon is there to represent the fullness of the gopi's bhakti. And the flowers are fully blossoming to represent the fullness of their hearts blooming for Krishna's service. So right now, this same point is told by Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He talks about states of consciousness. Maybe you've read that. He talks about budding consciousness. Partially budding, and fully blossomed consciousness in prema. Have you read that? So that fully blossoming is fullness. So when one is in prema, then there's nothing else. He's niskinchan. He has no cares or worries or attachments in this world. Sarvapali vinirmuktam, tatpar tvaina nirmalam. Rishikeshi, Rishikeshi, kenam, sevanam bhakti yushate. Everything is seva. Only Krishna's seva and Krishna's love. So the gopis, they could be there with Krishna because they were blossoming. Sometimes they say, oh, she's a flowering girl. A young girl when she enters puberty and develops all the signs and symptoms of womanhood. So this fullness of these udipans indicate that their bhakti is full. And unless we're gopi anugata, we're following the gopis in pure devotion, pure love, unless our bhakti is full, we can't give up all those attachments that they gave up. We'll still cling. When Krishna says go back home, we'll go back home. Oh, you shouldn't be here. Why are you staying? Oh, yeah, like someone comes. Oh, I'm thinking I should go back to Delhi, or maybe I should stay overnight. No, you should go back to Delhi. Oh, you think so? Yeah, go. But so the guru may be testing. But then the person, no, I really want to stay. You really want to stay? Okay, stay. So we usually were clinging because we're not full in Krishna bhakti, because our hearts aren't fully blossomed in prem. Then we hold on, we cling, we hold on to so many things. We run back. Even if we approach Krishna, we run back. So this analogy is being given here. So let's read this purport for Vishnu Chakravarti in text 22. Krishna said, "Now that your desire to see the beauty of the forest has been fulfilled, don't delay, go immediately. O Sati, O chaste ladies, you should serve your husbands to help them complete their religious duties." After speaking like this to Radharani and Lalita Vishaka, the married gopis, Krishna said to the unmarried gopis, "You should go milk the cows, for the calves are crying, and they can't drink their mother's milk until you've milked them." Then to the Munichari, suddenly to the gopis, he said, they're newly married, "Your babies are crying, go feed them milk." So now the inner meaning is this, that the alternate explanation which follows shows that Krishna is in a mood of begging the gopis. So this is the internal meaning. Actually, Krishna is saying, he's actually begging the gopis. So now, as I mentioned earlier, there's a kind of a shift. The external meaning of Krishna is Bhamya Bhav. Just like in Man, when Radharani sometimes, when she's in Man, and that's being induced, there's a Hoitaki Man, where there's no real cause from her heart, but the cause may be she's induced by Lalita Sakhi or some other Sakhis to display a contrary, unfavorable mood, Bhamya Bhav, in this Man. But she's thinking, although the Sakhis, they're saying, don't submit to Krishna, ignore him, don't pay attention, don't, when he petitions you, just play like this, hard to get. But Radharani's heart is actually Dakshin. She wants to be with Krishna, she wants, although she displays this mood. So Krishna's, when the external meaning of these verses is taken, when you read the Bhagavatam, Krishna's taking the superior role that, I'm not interested, you know, you came, why you came, what is the reason for your coming? It says Bhamya Bhav, that he's playing the mood of where the heroines usually play. Usually the hero, the man, is begging the woman or flattering the woman, wooing her, being very gentle and kind to win her heart and to win her intimacy. So now the internal meaning is that Krishna is actually Dakshin Bhav, because usually in love, loving affairs, the man, according to Natya Shastra, in reality we see, the man is always submissive to the woman in these intimate dealings. That's called Dakshin Bhav, submissive feeling. So the internal meaning is just that, where Krishna is petitioning, begging the gopis. Rather than saying, go home, he's saying, don't go home. Rather, stay with me here in the forest and enjoy with me throughout the night. Then he's talking about husbands and cows and all this. Don't go serve your husbands, children, mothers-in-law and other relatives. It would not be fitting for you to waste such beauty and youth that you possess, which are gifts of the Creator. Now, nor should you go milk cows or give milk to the calves and babies. What do you do? What do you, who are full of ecstatic love for me, have to do with any of these affairs? In other words, he's saying that you've already left all these things just by virtue of your being before me. You already come this far, now you're not going to go back. I'm saying go back, but you know you can never go back and you don't want to go back. You surrendered everything. You're full of ecstatic love, so all these things mean nothing. So that's the point. When we have ecstatic love for Krishna and complete and full attachment to Krishna, then all these externals mean nothing. Mother, father, family, friends, country, body, all this means nothing. We don't cling to it, we don't care for it, we don't need it, we've transcended it. The gopis are showing just that. So there's more, he says that, that was about it. Gopis are loyal to their husbands. He actually goes more, but I summarize that. This is Vishwanath himself, because it's a summary of his points. Although the gopis, this verse explains, the gopis could not really be sure exactly what Krishna was doing. It wasn't that clear, because he was speaking in double talk, double language. It has an external meaning, but is that the real meaning? That's why they wouldn't look at him in the eye. It can't be true what he's saying, to go home and serve her husband. That can't be really what he means. Don't look at him. Just look at the Yamuna. or look at the trees. Pretend you're interested in the trees. Oh yeah, the trees look so interesting. The tree is more interesting than Shyamasundar, right? And oh, the Yamuna is more interesting than Shyamasundar. Oh, these flowers. Oh, look at it, Saki, look at these flowers. Oh yeah, they're so nice. They're really nice to touch. I'd like to caress these flowers and dance with these flowers. Embrace these flowers. They're pretending to look at the flowers, look at the moon. They're looking everywhere but right at Krishna. I can't say they're fearing, they're also fearing, they're having union, but they're fearing separation. They're impending, they haven't even had union yet. Even before union, they're afraid they're going to not attain union and be separated even without fulfilling their desire for union with Krishna, to satisfy and fulfill his desires. So they're not sure whether he's joking, or is he inviting them to stay, or is he instructing them to go home? Thus, as Krishna spoke about the beauty of the forest, the gopis felt embarrassed and bewildered and looked upward at the trees. And as he spoke about the Yamuna, they looked all around at the river. Their absolute purity and simplicity, along with their absolute devotion to Lord Krishna in the conjugal mood, Madhurya Ras, created the most beautiful pastimes ever exhibited in this universe. That's a beautiful subjective statement of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And anyone who tightly examines this pastime with a neutral mentality will see that an open mind, I'd rather say, an open mind and unbiased viewpoint, he'll see that actually he'll agree, he'll concur with Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that this is the most beautiful pastime ever exhibited in the universe. Krishna's Maharas dance, all the different levels, you know, the calling for love, the meeting, the discussion, the samlap, the distress, the search, the separation, the reunion, the celebration, the suspense, the union, the the anticipation, the fear, the anguish, and the relief. It has all the elements of a love story, and it's fantastic. It's most beautiful. The poetry, the imagery, the philosophy, the tattva, as we heard, it's the greatest Vedantists, the gopis, when they speak, they'll reveal that there's a Bhakti Vedantist. Because it's the conclusion of all the Vedas. Vedanta is devotion, love of God, prema pumarta mahan. Prema pumarta. Veda is all about art. Vedart. Vedart. The Veda is all about art, benefit, attainment. So much Veda. Veda means knowledge. Why do we attain knowledge or acquire knowledge? We acquire knowledge and collect knowledge to attain what we want. Fulfillment of arts, music. We want music, art, knowledge. Knowledge of music, Ayurveda, Jyotirveda, Sangeetveda. Or you want knowledge of yoga, karma. Karma, yoga, bhakti, devotion. We want knowledge of this body. We want knowledge how to get liberated from this world. How to control the senses, how to control the elements. How to control the elements of the material world. How to control the senses, how to control our mind, how to get free from this birth and death. All that knowledge is Veda, Vedart. So the Prema Pumarta Mahan, the greatest art that the Vedas convey is the art of love. Love. This is the greatest Kala. Prema Kala. Kala means art. The greatest art is the art of loving Krishna, and that's Bhakti, Bhakti Yoga. So the gopis are the greatest artists, Kalavati Radha, Kalavati Sakis. They are the greatest artists in the art of love. And that is the fulfillment of the Vedas. So therefore they're Bhakti Vedanta. They're Vedanta. They've reached the highest objective and highest viewpoint and highest attainment of all Vedic knowledge. Because Vedic knowledge is meant to give us art, Vedart. And the greatest art is love. And they are the masters of love. They're the queens of love. So they are, and then we say Vedantists in that regard. And then we have this term Bhakti Vedanta, because their bhakti is Prema Bhakti, Gopika Bhakti, Braja Bhakti. So they preach that in their statements, which we'll hear. They defeat each one of Krishna's statements. He's preaching karma, which is a lower level. He's preaching jnana, which is a higher level. And they're preaching bhakti and pure bhakti, which is the topmost level of Veda, topmost art. So that we're going to see. So the conclusion that we see here, there's one point by Sri Jiva Goswami. He suggests that Krishna isn't, he actually says, what is the meaning of these verses? Actually, Krishna is emphatically saying Brajagopis, do not attend to your husbands, calves, and children. They're not crying. Therefore, you need not feed them and nurse them. So these two verses, Vishnath is speaking double ways, because on one level, it allows these verses, the way he speaks them, it allows Krishna to be seen as morally proper and mischievous at the same time. If you look at it, at one level, you can defend Krishna. He's completely moral, completely religious. He's preaching Dharma, just like Bhagavad Gita. Will anyone question Krishna's morality or propriety and his teachings of Bhagavad Gita? He's a kshatriya, he's a hero, he's acting as a sarathi, a humble servant of Arjuna. And he's preaching Dharma, karma, Dharma, yoga, and karma and bhakti. So no one's going to question. Everything he says is clear and outright, and no mischief inside. But in these verses of the Bhagavatam, Rasa Panchadhyaya, the five chapters, you can see Krishna, you can prove and establish that Krishna is completely moral and religious and untainted by any contamination. But then the same verses, you can see that he's very mischievous and very playful. He's playing with the gopis, and this is an expression of Dhiralit Nayak, Nayakta, his tendency to be a Dhiralit hero. So I was thinking of this, these three qualities which Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he glorified the gopis. He said, the gopis have three qualities here. He said, absolute purity, simplicity, and devotion. That's a very nice combination of qualities. So this is something that, if we look at these three qualities, the gopis, their absolute purity of the gopis, the absolute simplicity. Third thing is their absolute devotion to Krishna and Madhurya Ras created the most beautiful pastimes ever exhibited in this universe. So any devotee who has these qualities in an absolute, complete, and perfect way of purity, simplicity, and devotion, he will be able to engage in the most beautiful pastimes in the universe with Krishna, and be able to be a servant of those pastimes. So I was thinking about these qualities, and I was thinking, what does purity mean? So I wrote here a note on it this afternoon. Purity means free from any false designations. That's what purity means. Purity means free from any false designations, and such as belonging to this and that family or this or that. And purity means realizing and acting. You realize and then you act that I don't belong to anyone or anything, but I belong to Krishna. I am His eternally. I'm His eternal part and parcel. I'm His eternal servant. And all of the energy I have should be used for the interest of Krishna. But generally, impurity means that our energy is used for the interest of others. We're using so much of our energy for the interest of others, for their welfare, for their safety, for their protection, for their maintenance. So this is some impurity in our understanding. Because once we understand that, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadan, all my sambandha is Krishna, all my relationships are Krishna, all my source of my protection and dependency and needs and everything is Krishna. All the sources of my seva are Krishna. My wealth is Krishna. My life is Krishna. My heart is Krishna. This is purity. So this is purity of purpose and the platform of pure Krishna consciousness. When our only interest is the interest of Krishna. One of Krishna's 64 qualities is also purity. So we have something of that. We are aspiring to have some of these qualities of Krishna. This is nectar devotion. Since Krishna is the supreme purity, one gets immediately purified and cleansed by any contact with Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, holy abode, eternal associates, teachings, remembrance, service, and his representative, the spiritual master. So if you contact any of those, you become pure. Purity is the force or potency that pushes one toward God and away from the dirty desires for sense enjoyment. By chanting Krishna's holy name, one connects with Krishna's purity and becomes cleansed of lust, anger, greed, envy, and illusion. Rupa Goswami says Krishna possesses two types of supreme purity. So we can apply this to ourselves also. What is one definition of supreme purity? Or it's called Shuchi. Shuchi, purity. One, Krishna never does anything impure. So that's from his personal side, his behavior, his activity. So we can question ourselves, do we do anything that's impure? The basic impurities are breaking the four principles. Having illicit sex, or eating meat, fish, or eggs, or eating, you know, onions and garlic, and contacting intoxicants, tea and coffee and thumbs up. A lot of devotees drink thumbs up, I've seen. It's a big fashion these days. The thumbs up has caffeine inside. It's like drinking coffee. At any rate, they never went on when Prabhupada was here. Now it's a big fashion. Krishna, so that's doing something impure. Impure eating, impure habits, impure behavior. So Krishna never does that, so he's pure. Or impurity means eating, not eating prasad. We just eat something because we're lusty or greedy, or grab some crackers or juice and eat it or whatever. Because we can't control our impurities. And then, so that's Krishna's personal expression of purity, that he never does anything impure. So a devotee was aspiring for purity and to be a pure devotee. And that's the force of preaching. He or she never does anything impure, like Krishna. So above, so below, like father, like son. And the second thing is, what is the effect or impact or influence of that purity of one's behavior on others? We say purity is a force. Your personal behavior, your personal purity, which you embody, which you embody, which you exhibit, which you absorb, automatically distributes itself to others. And that your purity becomes a force which emanates from the purity of your heart and the purity of your own being, and that force emanates and spreads amongst those who contact you. And that is what means preaching. Preaching, purity is a force. So then it says here that Krishna's second quality is Krishna's purity delivers the sinful. Krishna's purity delivers the sinful. These are two qualities of the definition, the lakshana, characteristics of Krishna's purity. So our purity, that's why Prabhupada said purity is a force. The more pure we become in all our habits, behavior, speech, activity, the more impact and force and power we will have to deliver others, to attract others to Krishna consciousness, to actually change their hearts and change their minds and create, to attract them and then to attach them and to further attach them and deepen their attachment. This is based on purity. As the sun of Krishna's holy name rises within the heart, one gets delivered from the darkness of sin and firmly established in a life of purity. Chanting more and more, one soon becomes pure and empowered to see the supreme purity, Sri Krishna, the beautiful. So this is one of the absolute qualities of Krishna, the gopis that Vishwanath glorifies. The Braja gopis' absolute purity and simplicity, along with their absolute devotion to Lord Krishna, in the mood of conjugal love, created the most beautiful pastimes ever exhibited in this universe. So preaching itself is a beautiful pastime. This is 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan with Krishna's parishads and parikars and nitya siddhas and sadhana siddhas, gopis, perfected human beings who enter Krishna's mode of Vrindavan Leela. And they're taking part in the most beautiful pastimes of the entire universe. There's also Gaur Leela, Gauranga's Leela. And those who become pure and absolute in their purity and absolute in their, and simple, simplicity, absolute. They're absolutely pure and absolutely simple and absolutely devoted to Krishna in a particular mood of love, be it Madhurya Rati or Sakhi Rati, pure devotion. They will create the most beautiful pastimes in the universe by spreading the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. And they will experience those beautiful pastimes. The devotees that are pure, they experience this beautiful pastime that's going on right now. Lord Krishna's pastime is prakat in some universe, but Lord Chaitanya's pastime is ever prakat in this universe. right now, because Sankirtan is Nitya. And this Leela Lord Chaitanya is still going on in every town and village. As he said it will go to every town and village. So as long as it's going, he started in a few towns and villages. So that means the Leela started by him and it's still going on. He didn't start and end the Leela. Krishna started and ended his Leela. He started in Gokul and ended in Prabhasa Kshetra. I went to another universe. Lord Chaitanya started his universe here 500 years ago, in this universe, in this planet. And he said it will go on, Prithiviti Yachi Nagaradigram. It will go to every town and village. So this Leela is Prakat right now. It's a unique feature, Lord Chaitanya's Leela. So anyone who takes part in seriously as a pure representative of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, by their absolute purity and simplicity and absolute devotion to Lord Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu, and Radha and Krishna, and Gopi Bhav, or Mantri Bhav, then they will create the most beautiful pastime ever exhibited in the universe, and take part in the most beautiful pastime ever exhibited in the universe, and that's Lord Chaitanya's pastime. This is a nice conclusion of the verse. These two verses, and then tomorrow we'll start at verse 23. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana ki jai.